y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s-loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of child death. Listener discretion is advised.
On Friday, April 23rd, 2021, Zale Dudas and her younger brother, Saxon Nairn, were swimming in a backyard pool unattended with a scuba diving tank. Both kids were said to be proficient swimmers. However, at 7 and 9 years old, they were not proficient scuba diving experts. The scuba tank, typically filled with oxygen, was actually filled with helium. Both children passed out due to the inhalation of the helium and were found at the bottom of the pool. 4 days after the incident, both children passed away. Their deaths were determined to be an accident. However, their grieving mother, Susie Dudas, is seeking justice for her two young children.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear it from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
Guys, this is a tough case.
Yeah, really, really.
We say that knowing they all are, but child death cases are really, really difficult. And we actually heard about this case on TikTok. We had some people tagging us. Susie has been super, super active on TikTok, trying to share information and share the story. And I'm honestly surprised that not many true crime people have picked it up just because of the questions surrounding it.
Absolutely, yeah.
And a big thanks to Beth for writing this one up, but she did also speak with Susie directly. Mm-hmm. So a big thank you to Susie, because we know that, or we just can't imagine what she's going through, and to have to repeat it and talk about it over and over.
The strength that she possesses is
absolutely
beyond
absolutely
words.
All right, so let's jump into it. We are first going to tell you a little bit about Zale and Saxon, which both of them, I think they look just like Susie. Like, mm-hmm. They were little Susies.
Oh.
Zale Dudas was 9 years old at the time of her death, and a family member, Carrie Dudas, said of her, quote, Zale was nine. She just had her ninth birthday. Curious, blunt, and positive. She was a positive spirit. I did also find there is a Justice for Zale and Saxon Facebook group, and also Susie's account on TikTok is Justice for Zale and Saxon. If you want to watch her videos, we get a lot of information from those as well. Somebody in that group actually shared the eulogy that Susie gave her daughter at the service for her children. And it gives us just a lot of wonderful information about her. And Susie also shares a lot of, because people will ask in the comments, like, what were their favorite things? And what did they like to do on the farm that you lived on and stuff like that? And she just lights up telling these stories about her babies. Says she arrived on Earth February 8th, 2012, the best, most exemplary big sister, one half of the dynamic Zale and Saxon duo. Beloved daughter, mama-loving girl, she earned her fire silk dragon wings on April 23rd, 2021. She always wanted to fly. Zale is survived by her mother and her loving family of grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, farm animals, pets, and a grieving community. Zale had a giant heart. She was connected to nature. She was a bridge to the wild. She found things she could use. She tinkered and engineered and created and played. She was a master lizard catcher. She made toys for the cat. She annoyed fish with bear hooks until they couldn't stand it anymore and let her catch them. She was a natural teacher, a caretaker, a practical farmer. As a younger child, Zale loved to hear one monster after another. As Sally Ann's letter to Lucy Jane goes on fantastic journeys when a stamp collection trollis steals it from the mailbox. This beloved, much-read story helped set her imagination on fire, and Zale devoured the Wings of Fire books as she became a more confident reader. She drew dragons every day, especially fire silk dragons and dragon babies. Zale's dragons always had beautiful but strong wings. She always wanted to fly. Zale was a practical engineer, a farmer, a creative builder, a creator, a nurturer. For a period of time, Zale was mothered by the farm's white turkey named Cloud. Turkeys, man. When Cloud was smaller, Zale would carry the bird around like a purse. As Cloud grew older, she became the mother. Cloud would puff up and protect our girl. Zale could prepare and cook eggs from a very early age. She would make lunches for me, Susie, always nurturing, caring, supporting. She was brutally honest. She was a giver of gifts. She was known to climb to the very top of spindly-limbed trees and come down bearing gifts of, I don't know what these are, frangipani?
Frangipani? I'm so sorry. I don't know.
Blooms for farm visitors. Zale did not like to brush her hair or go to bed. Every night of her life, I would give Zale a hug, a kiss on each cheek, an Eskimo kiss, and a butterfly kiss. I will continue to do this forever in my heart. Oh,
my heart. Yes.
Saxon was 2 years younger than his older sister. And Mike Dudas said of him, quote, Saxon was seven, so he was just starting to grow into the person he was going to be. He was completely fearless. It has also been said that, you know, Zale loved dragons and books, but they kind of referred to Saxon as a boy's boy. Mike said that Saxon was wild and untamed. And in one of Susie's videos on TikTok, somebody asked, like, how did she choose their names? Because they're very interesting names. And she said that she actually chose the name Saxon first, which means people of the sword. And she was like, it was so fitting for him. But she didn't find out what the kids were before they came. So she had picked out Saxon first, and then Zale ended up being born. It was a girl. So she ended up getting Zale's name from a diving friend of her mom's and later learned that it means strength of the ocean, which she also found to be fitting for her daughter who loved being in the water. We do also have a little bit more information about Saxon from Susie's eulogy. Saxon Utah Nairn. Like, she's so good at doing naming children. Like, my goodness.
Saxon was born on this earth on November 28, 2013. In his 7 years of wild outdoor life and love, he was a pant-hating, glitter-glue-loving, good-natured destroyer. Saxon was known to roar up to groups of farm visitors on his mini four-wheeler and welcomed others to pet the chickens, cows, and lizards. He loved his arsenal of Nerf guns and stories of boys on adventures, finding gold, saving the day. He left the videos on my phone of himself as a trapped leprechaun almost blending into the green around him as he and his sister played out their story. Saxon loved being outside, but he also loved his screen time and snacks. Flight Simulator brought him closer to his dream of flying. He had no fear of climbing out of the house, over the roof, and into my room to access my laptop and play online. He roared through life on his four-wheeler, on the zip line, and running off the end of the paddleboard in the pond. He loved evening swims with me in our pond. We always looked for alligators. He wanted to make everyone happy. He was naturally able to connect with others, and he helped people experience the world the way he did. Saxon's unsolicited openness, his loving nature, made him comfortable touching others. He welcomed farm visitors, often responding with care and knowledge beyond his years, especially when a visitor had special needs or fear. He coaxed a student with Down syndrome onto the trampoline and had her jumping with abandon within minutes. He caught chickens and taught nervous adults to, quote, pet with one finger. He was a bridge to wild, a connection to nature, a smart, funny, loving heart and soul. For all his wildness, Saxon was a snuggle bug. He was a lover of his mama. He would climb on my lap, hold my t-shirt, and rub it between his fingers while he sucked his thumb, at peace and happy. He wore out one of my bathrobes snuggling with it. His attack hugs were epic. He flew into hugs. Every night I would give him one big kiss on the lips, and he would do his best to keep me in the top bunk with him as he fell asleep. He was always touching, always protective, always sure I was there. And we want to give a special thank you to Kobe Smith Campbell for putting Susie's words into writing. I know.
I have nothing.
I almost got a little choked up there for a second. I didn't see that coming. I mean, not that if you know me, I hate to cry. It's a weakness. I'm like, get back in there. But
yeah, that's just all right. We have to get through this, but
I'm sorry.
So, like we said, Zale and Saxon were the children of Susie Dudas and Rodney Nairn. Both Susie and Rodney were scuba diving professionals. You guys, that's a big fucking deal, okay, in this case. Susie also runs a farm in Jupiter, Florida, which we're going to talk about a little bit more later. Susie and Rodney were separated, and they were going through a divorce at the time of their children's deaths. So we got a little bit more information about this from Susie, and she kind of gave us a little bit of a rundown of sort of like the timeline leading up to this and all these things, because it's a little bit confusing. You'll see reported that they were already divorced. You'll see reported that they were not yet divorced. So there's like, it's all happening during this time. And I just also want to point out that like, the data of how dangerous this time is for a woman leaving a relationship, that extends to other people like their children. It's just very curious that this is the time that this happens.
And both children.
It's just, yes, exactly. So while they were married, they both lived at the farm. That was their primary residence. Susie does say that they were living in separate rooms since April of 2020. In one of her TikToks, she does go into a little bit of detail about their marriage. She does not use the term coercive control in anything that she says. But if you watch that video, that's kind of what I hear being described. And I'm, you know, it's just, I could be way off, but some of the things that she talked about were that he was increasingly isolating her friends and family, that a lot of them did not want to come around anymore or were uncomfortable talking to him or things like that. So it sounded like, I don't know if she was having less contact with them. She didn't say that, but I believe she did use the word isolating. She doesn't use the term. She doesn't say anything about sexual abuse or anything like that. But one of the things that he wanted and started proposing towards the end was to have an open marriage. And that was very important to him. And it sounded like he was really pushing for that. She doesn't use that term necessarily, but she says that he was not just proposing an open marriage, but it was something that he required. And that is very manipulative.
Well, yeah.
Especially if it's something that, first of all, has never been a part of your marriage. It's not ever something that you both talked about and agreed on. And they were married for like 20 years. I mean, it was a long time that they were married. A little over, I believe. And she said she finally was like, I cannot compromise my own morals and values. And so they separated.
Obviously, it was a big damn deal to him if he's willing to...
Right.
Yeah.
To lose the marriage and the family unit.
Yeah.
Because...
You either always wanted this and didn't say it, or you all of a sudden want this. I don't know. It's just...
Yeah. I hope it... hope that's worth it, dude. Right. So in September of 2020, she said she served him divorce papers. He hired his lawyer and emailed his lawyer to draw out the divorce. And he bought a plane ticket to go back to Australia for a few months. So he's an Australian citizen. He has his green card through Susie in their marriage since 2000. In January 2021, she says, Rodney empties the business bank account, stops our business loan payments. And they owned a scuba diving type business together. Again, they know a lot about scuba diving. So just jot that down. Okay. She said a loan that was guaranteed personally by both of us and default would have led to a lien on the farm. He then returns to Australia on an open-ended ticket. He gives me access to the business bank account after he leaves, which is when she finds out it's been empty out at this point. Rodney returns to Florida from Australia April 16th, 2021. No notice, no communication, just bingo bongo, I'm back home. Hey, here I am. That's when Rodney finds out that the loan did not default and that she was dating someone. She says this was especially significant because she married him at 21 as a virgin. That was very important to him. Okay. To me, the fact that he found out that she was dating somebody before he had that control.
Right.
And this, like, she had filed, but she moved on. That's, I've lost all control.
Right. Yeah.
It's gone, you know? Mm-hmm. She said, during this 1 week, I pushed him to take full custody of our kids for the first time ever. One whole week in charge of them 24/7, except they had school during the day and I was here to keep an eye on them, but tried not to interfere with their interactions. Rodney was insisting on 50-50 custody so that he didn't have to pay me anything. She said that she also told him that her intention was to continue farming and living with the children in Jupiter. She also gave him the ultimatum that he buy her out of their scuba business at a real price, not just, fine, I'll throw you some bones for it or whatever.
Right.
Or that she with her new boyfriend were going to compete against him with an exact scuba business in the same area, I'm assuming. All of these things say, my give a damn is busted, sir.
Yeah. Like you're going to have to,
yeah, this is real. She says that Rodney spent the week doing activities with the children at the house and then brought the children with him on Friday afternoon, April 23rd, 2021. The kids have been in school all day that whole week. So he has to, the whole thing is he's got to go work on, and Tori's going to get into this in detail, but he's got to go work on a friend's scuba equipment or whatever. And so he's home this whole week.
Has all free, the free time from what, let's say 7:30 in some cases, 8 to 2, 3.
Yeah. To go and do that work. And he chooses not to. He waits until this day and then brings the kids with him. This was the only time he brought the kids with him anywhere that whole week. Mm-hmm. Just to this. I don't know.
It's suspicious at best.
At best, yeah. The timing is, it's just, what are the odds? You know, you always hear about this in true crime, and investigators will say this all the time, that they don't believe in coincidences. Because it is just, what are the odds that this man, who has, for over 20 years, had utter control, it sounds like, because Susie was trying to please him and to make him happy and like all of these things. And finally, she says, I'm done doing that. Enough is enough. Not only is this marriage going to be over because I'm not going to compromise my own morals and values for you, for your pleasure, which get over it. I've moved on. And I'm putting my foot down. I have established this boundary and I'm not going back on it. He has finally lost all control. And then that day, both of their children die in a freak accident.
Right.
What a coinky dink.
Yeah. It's unfathomable. I don't see how that is. I don't think it was. Okay, we'll get into it. I'm getting ahead of myself here. I just don't. But all right, let's talk about what happened that day. On Friday, April 23rd, 2021, Zale and Saxon went for a visit with their father, Rodney. So Rodney took the kids to Marty Watson's home. He's a fellow scuba diving professional. Rodney was there to help Marty fix his underwater scooter. And Susie says, like, we talked about, he could have done this any other time of the week, all by himself. Mm-hmm. But he brings the kids with him.
Right.
A student of Marty's who happened to be a nurse was also at the home, and Rodney gave the kids permission to swim in a pool in their backyard. Rodney, Marty, and the student went to the garage where Rodney asked Marty for a scuba tank for the kids to play with.
How did that not raise any red flags to everybody else in the room? I'm sorry, what did you say, sir? You want me to give you a scuba tank for your 7 and 9-year-old children to play with? You don't give a scuba tank to a grown-up to play with.
I wouldn't know what to do with it, for sure.
Exactly.
But like, I understand that them having parents, like Susie and Rodney, obviously are scuba experts, you know, very, very, like, good with it. So I'm guessing it's not the first time that Zale and Saxon have been around a scuba tank. However, you don't just, like, here's this dangerous thing, and I'm not even going to pay attention to you. Y'all go play.
Yeah. Just do what you will with it. And also, like Susie says in her TikTok, she's like, we didn't own a pool at the farm. We didn't have a pool. So like, yes, Rodney and I were scuba experts. Her mom is also a scuba expert. But she says that their only actual experience doing any scuba diving was with her mom, like maybe a year before that. That's just not something they took the kids to do.
Well, and also, let's say that they did go scuba diving often. They didn't, the kids, but let's say they did. They're still 7 and 9.
Right.
They're not allowed. They should not be allowed to just...
Yeah.
Like, I just don't understand it.
No, and the egregious misreporting in this case and misinformation, there are articles out there that say both children, proficient scuba divers. Are you fucking kidding me? You have to take courses to become certified, and you can't do that at that age. There is no proficient 7-year-old scuba diver. That's not real.
No. I mean, I'm trying to liken it to something that I like, okay, for your kids, right? When you're outside with them in the front yard, they play in the front yard. So proficient sports ball players, right? That doesn't mean that you're going to be like, all right, go on. Because anything can happen.
Well, right. And like in this kind of situation, some might not say proficient driver, but I get around, right? Like I can get from A to B. The kids have seen me drive. They've ridden in the car. Is that the same as them having a fucking driver's license?
Right.
If one of my kids got behind the wheel and got in a wreck, is the media going to say, well, I mean, he's seen people drive cars, so he's proficient at it?
Yeah.
Why? Why is this the situation? There is no 7 or 9-year-old proficient scuba diver. There just is not.
Right.
Like maybe kids have done it before. That does not make them certified.
No, absolutely not. It's okay. Rodney went back to the pool to give the kids the tank. According to Rodney, he then placed the tank at the bottom of the pool before returning to the garage.
Okay. Excuse me, what?
Yeah.
He put the tank at the bottom of the pool.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, on the deep end of the pool. And let's say it wasn't. Let's say it wasn't.
3 feet.
Yeah. He says the goal was for them to take turns driving down, diving down, and breathing from the regulator, the mouthpiece. you're going to leave two children to do that by themselves?
Yeah, unattended. No eyes on them. They were left unattended. Three adults are in the garage working on this underwater scooter. And they were left unattended for a period of time until one of the adults returned to the pool to check on the kids. Shocked that even happened. And this is when both children were found at the bottom of the pool with the tank. Zale and Saxon were pulled out of the pool and CPR was attempted by the first responders. While first responders were on the scene, Martin County Fire and Rescue arrived at 5:47 p.m. and transported Zale and Saxon to the hospital. And according to one of the medical responders, Zale and Saxon could have been underwater for at least 10 minutes by the time that they had been pulled out. Both Zale and Saxon were in critical condition on April 23rd, and tragically, they both passed away on Tuesday, April 27th, 2021, despite all efforts to revive them. And Susie told us, like we said, or told Beth, who then told us, that her children only had one prior scuba diving experience when they were 4 and 6. And that was with the grandmother.
And so, like you said, even if they did it every day, it's a dangerous thing for a child to do unattended. Mm-hmm. Swimming in general.
A dangerous thing. Anything can happen.
The number one, don't quote me on this, but I have read or heard that the number one cause of death in children in Florida is drowning in pools.
I don't want to say like it makes sense, you know what I mean? But it's like.
But it does. A kid gets in a pool. A lot of the times the parents don't realize it, or whoever they're with doesn't realize it. Well, Why would you leave your kids completely unattended in a pool that is not their own, that they don't swim in every day? And I don't know.
I hate to bring her up, honestly, but I feel like we talked about that for the Casey Anthony case, because that was one theory, right? That she had drowned.
Yeah, one of her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean.
So, yeah. And then, of course, I think about, too, this is where my mind goes, and I'm sorry about it. I don't know why this happens. It's just who I am as a person. But I think about Beethoven. Remember the first one where they go over to that. I don't like her, that babysitter's house, and she's playing the piano, but then the little girl goes out and then she tries to get the ball and then she falls in the water. Beethoven saves her.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like that is something that is so common. Like we have friends who a couple years ago now bought a house that has a really nice pool in it. And the people who lived there before have this like fence thing around it. I had never seen anything like this. I think it's probably fairly common. I just hadn't seen it, but it's kind of like a mesh like fence and you can unhook it and leave it open. Like if you're having a party and people are getting in and out or whatever, but on a normal day, it's got a gate that you go in and out of. But if that gate is left open for, I'm talking more than just a few seconds, it's loud alarm sounds off. And it's so that if your kid goes in there and you don't realize it, you're going to hear that alarm. So that they're not unattended in a pool for a long period of time. Like it goes off really, really quickly. And we do our swimming lessons there with them. And it can be kind of annoying, you know, when you're like trying to get, you know, the kids are getting in and out and you're like, oh, the alarm keeps going off or whatever. But thank God for that. Like there's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good feature.
Yeah. You don't leave children unattended. I don't care if they're 7 and 9.
Mm-mm. I don't care if they have floaties
in a pool.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just, yeah. And you know, to each their own, whatever. I know that we grew up in a different time when, but I don't know if we were 7 and 9. I don't know, but we definitely did.
We were that young.
We did go swimming by ourselves at some point, but it wasn't even a deep pool. It was an above ground, like what, 3 foot deep pool. But still, I don't know. It's just, and Susie said she has never, ever given her children a scuba diving tank to play with while swimming. And to her knowledge, this was the first time that Rodney had done it too.
And why? Why on this day, why do you give them a tank?
And
why is that a good idea?
Walk away for however many minutes. Because who knows how long it was in between. It didn't sound like it was just the 10 minutes. It must have been longer than that.
Right.
An investigation into the death of Zale and Saxon was launched. According to the police report, Rodney arrived at the home and went into the garage first. The homeowner, Marty, was putting dive equipment together with the student that was there. Her job, according to Susie, is an ER nurse, and Rodney says hello to them, walks through the home, where he also says hello to the homeowner's wife and father. And the wife was recovering from surgery the day before, and then he takes the kids out to the pool. Rodney then comes back to the garage and asks the homeowner for a scuba tank. He is given one and takes it out to the pool. He gives the kids the scuba tank to, quote unquote, play with, and then goes back to the garage, presumably to work. He completes no work. He waits a few minutes and goes back out to the pool to check on the kids. The others hear him yelling for help, but by the time they get out to the pool, the children are laying on the deck. The nurse and homeowner start CPR until help arrives. And it was determined that the tank that the children were given to play with was filled with helium rather than oxygen, and it was unmarked. Because this tank was filled with 100% helium, both kids passed out in the pool. However, by the second week of May in 2021, the investigation was closed and both children's deaths were ruled as an accident. The state's attorney's office released the following statement in regard to the investigation, quote, "I can confirm that our office has conducted an exhaustive review of the sheriff's comprehensive investigation along with additional information and materials provided by the mother of Zale and Saxon. After significant legal research conducted by my chief assistant and one of my major crime prosecutors, it was determined that the state could not, in good faith, seek criminal charges in this heartbreakingly tragic event. Stated quite simply, the law and the facts prohibit a criminal prosecution in this instance. These findings and conclusions were communicated to the Martin County Sheriff's Office, and they have concurred with our decision. At an extensive in-person meeting, our findings and conclusions were communicated to the children's mother as well as her civil attorneys. During this meeting, my assistants answered questions and addressed concerns of the attorneys. Our hearts go out to all those who, my heart goes out to all those who loved Zale and Saxon, and while we completely understand their desire that someone, quote, be held responsible, unfortunately, that accountability cannot be found within the criminal justice system."
Why? Children have the right to be supervised. Adults have the responsibility to provide adequate supervision and safe environments for their children to be in.
That is literally one of the bare essential, like that's a basic need to be a parent, no? Like,
Well, and that's a law. Like, how else do you think people get charged with neglect?
I was going to say that. Like, child neglect? Can we not? That's off the table?
Right. Yeah.
I don't get it. And
that's what that's for.
I feel so, obviously, we both do feel so terrible for Susie that she has to go through this, of course. I cannot even imagine, but having to just accept, well, it was an accident.
Mm-hmm.
How? Tell me how.
Even if it was, first of all, even if it was, now we can charge parents for forgetting their children in cars, which does happen.
And is very well, sometimes a complete accident. That
absolutely
is an actual accident.
Yeah. Like there are studies on it. It's all different ranges and walks of life of parents and like all that. It has happened to
any
kind of parent, whatever.
Sure.
It's an accident, but we can put them in prison for life and call it murder. Not only did these children, were they left in a pool unattended, they were given a piece of equipment that is so dangerous if not used properly. And then you find out it's filled with helium?
Nobody bothered to check it first. It was unmarked. So who the fuck knows what even could have been in there had it not been helium? I don't know what else you could put. I don't know. But you know what I mean? It's like they didn't know oxygen, helium, toxic
gas. None of it.
Gas. I don't know.
Yeah.
The cause of death on the certificates is asphyxiation.
I just don't see how that's not at the very least neglect.
At the very least. Saxon was able to donate both of his kidneys, his liver, and his heart. And Zale was able to donate both kidneys, liver, pancreas, intestines, heart, and lungs.
But also, I'm not a doctor. But I guess I don't know this for sure, but it's reported that they drowned in the pool. That's not true. Mm-mm. They didn't drown. Can you donate your lungs if you've drowned?
I
And the death certificate does not state drowning.
Mm-mm. It's asphyxiation.
Yeah.
My question, though, is, and we're going to get into it, but my question, too, is, this is not two tanks, it's just the one. Yet, they both
pass out simultaneously at the bottom of the fucking pool when they have to alternate one regulator?
One would think that, you know, God forbid you see your brother or sister passed out, how did it happen to both of them at the same time?
Exactly. How is that not a question investigators are asking?
And there weren't two regulators. I don't even know if that's, like, I am obviously no scuba expert, so I don't even know if this is possible, but like,
right.
One regulator, one tank, two children.
This is one right now. And also, so we're getting kind of ahead of ourselves, but whatever.
I know.
The regulator when it's in water. So I did, when we went to Curacao. Yeah, I didn't make it all the way to scuba diving because I had a panic attack. But anyway, that shit freaks me out. So we had to take the class. We had to take the course, the intro thing or whatever. You had to do it for safety.
Yeah.
Then they take you get strapped up, you get your scuba all shit on you and all that stuff. Then they take you to the water and you go down about 8 feet. This is a practice because this first dive is like 40 something feet deep. So you're practicing at 8 feet. So we come down to the bottom. It's like just right there. I'm like, okay, Torella, you can do this. Don't freak out. You've got one regulator that's in your mouth that you're using to breathe. You have a second one in case for whatever reason, this one comes off. You can't find, like, whatever happens or if there's a problem with it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You have a second one. Okay. So the two things you have to do before you do the dive is you have to find that regulator that's strapped on. You have to grab it, bring it around town. You have to clear it because there's water inside of it. You have to get the water out of it first and then you can breathe in. The other thing you have to do is clear water from your mask. You have to let water fill up your mask and you have to clear all the water out. You have to practice both of those. I said, no, 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 get me the fuck out of here. And I went back up. But the interesting thing to me is, again, these kids are supposed to be playing with equipment they've never used. So do they know that they have to, this tank is at the bottom of the pool. They would have to clear the water out of that regulator before they breathe in. There's no water in their lungs. They don't know to clear it. So they dive to the bottom of this pool. They breathe in. They're going to get water because they don't know to clear it.
Well, and let's go with just devil's advocate, I guess. Like, let's go with they have had a lesson when they were 4 and 6.
Oh.
Would you trust someone all by themselves would you trust a pilot if they completed flight school at 4 or 6? No!
Right. And at 4, like, Jesse went skiing. I guess he was like, more like 3, but there are things that he's done when he was like 4 years old. We talked about something this morning. Ben was bringing up something that he's like, oh, remember a couple years ago when we did XYZ. I don't remember why. I can't remember what it is right now, but anyway. And I'm like, oh yeah. Oh, it was when we made a snowman because it snowed a bunch and we met the new neighbor across the street or whatever. He just like came over and was like, hey, can I make a snowman? We met him and like, whatever. He's since moved away. And so Ben was talking about, I miss him. He's really fun. Like, I wish we could make another snowman with him, whatever. And I said, Jesse, do you remember meeting him and building that snowman with him? And he's like, no. He doesn't remember it because he was 4. Yeah. Like, there's stuff that kids don't remember. Like, mm-hmm. So maybe Zale would have remembered if they did that, but Saxon probably not. And is Zale then going to be like, okay, now we have to clear it for, like, no. And you're just going to trust your kids to do that. Like,
they had no business at all being given that scuba tank, being in that pool by themselves for that long. And even being at the fucking house, I'll just go that far. Like, no business. 100%. He had all the time in the world and he didn't do it until they were mad. Not nearly as mad as Susie, understandably so, but it's getting me heated and I'm pissed about it. So immediately following the deaths of Zale and Saxon, Rodney filed a lawsuit against Marty in regard to the unlabeled tank that was given to him to give to his children. So somebody is responsible. It's not Rodney, obviously.
It was not Rodney. No, he couldn't help that.
No. Marty was served on May 5th and Susie was made aware of the lawsuit. And she was advised to get a lawyer of her own and join the lawsuit so that should the case be settled, Rodney wouldn't be the only person receiving any sort of compensation. The lawsuit also included the scuba diving company, Stewart Scuba, as they were the ones who provided Marty with the tank that was filled with helium. Marty's dive business insurance, or business's insurance, excuse me, excluded him from the lawsuit because he was not instructing at the time of the incident. The case is still in progress, and one of the main focuses is the illegality of filling a scuba tank with only helium.
Yeah, and we will talk more about the whole helium situation, but this is also a thing that, like, if it was an accident, I don't think that it would look suspicious that he filed a lawsuit. But because there are so many questions around it, like, and for Susie too, because I've seen her talk about it on TikTok, it's like the fact that he could profit financially from this happening is really hard to swallow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we talked about this on other cases, obviously, but like one questionable, like, whatever, that's one thing, right? But it's, you have to put the whole puzzle together to see, like, that doesn't look right. Like, that didn't sit well with me, that's for sure.
Right. And it's just, there are just so many questions. Like, sure. And I think all Susie wants is just
answers.
How did it happen? Like, just saying that, like, why were they left to swim by themselves with a scuba tank in the first place? Like, these are just things that she wants to know. There may be absolutely nothing nefarious going on here, but right now there's just not enough answers to bring that into focus, you know?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, in your mind, I would think, I mean, again, I feel for her, but your mind wants to make sense of it, right? Like, how, why? And if you're not getting those answers from the person who was supposed to be watching and being in charge of your children, his own children too, if you're not getting those answers from him, it's like, what else are you supposed to think?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Marty is still a scuba instructor, last we've heard. Rodney is still diving and highly regarded in the diving world, even seeming to have protection by that community online. And Torella talked to Whitney Shanahan, who has released several TikToks on the case. She attended a live stream that a scuba company in the area did, and she asked about this case specifically, and the dive shop owner got visibly flustered and would not answer. The level of protection these men both have to still be able to work in an industry that could have so many dangerous outcomes if not done properly, and those results have been seen, is astonishing. Neither of their names have ever been connected in media articles to the deaths of the children, and they've been regarded as, quote, victims of a tragedy.
Yeah. And the thing is, this guy is still an instructor. And I guarantee you, when he's instructing, he's teaching to analyze the gases in the tanks, and he's teaching proper labeling. He has to be.
Well, there's a reason why you would need a scuba instructor, right? Because there are rules, there are procedures, there are things that you have to do that you wouldn't know to do. The reason for that, if you're a scuba instructor, I would think that if you are not following those rules or doing things the right way, you probably wouldn't be able to be a scuba instructor. So why on that day did he not, why did anybody check it?
Yeah. And I wonder too, from his perspective, because he knows that Rodney is so proficient in this and such an expert, that
maybe he thought he checked it.
Yeah. This could have happened both ways. Rodney asked for a scuba tank, and he assumes, because Marty is an industry professional too, that he's done all his due diligence and he's giving him a safe tank to give to his kids, leaving out why that's what you would give your children to play with. Maybe he assumes Marty has checked it. Flip side, Marty assumes Rodney is going to do the process that you're supposed to do because he's also a professional. Like,
that never even entered my mind. I'm glad that we are talking about this like this, because it really puts things into perspective sometimes, because I'm like, nope, get rid of him. Yeah. This is not no.
Right. And again, the reason that But we don't know because we don't know, because there have not been those answers. So if that's the situation, it would just be nice to know that. Like, because it just, as it stands, this happened and there are more questions than answers. And it's very hard to sit with two people that were so, are so regarded in this industry, so proficient in this industry, skilled and all the things, and somehow it slipped through the cracks with both of them. Mm-hmm. And is that what happened? It just slipped through the cracks. It just would be nice to have some of those answers.
Absolutely.
Hey, you guys, it's us again.
Yay, it's us.
We threw you for a loop on this one. So we know that a lot of you have been asking, like, WTF, where are episodes 1 through 44? And guess what? Now you can have them.
So let's just remember, though, we need you to take a little caution here. We didn't know exactly what we were doing back then. And we started this podcast as just a fun thing to do as sisters. We had no idea that it would grow into this super awesome club with you guys. So what we're saying is the audio wasn't super amazing, but the content is 100% us, just being us and talking about some true crime with 90s flair.
Okay, so here are the details. You'll be able to access our what we're calling OG episodes in your favorite podcast app through a private and custom RSS feed link. So to grab that, head over to killerqueens.link/OG and snag episodes 1 through 44 today. That's killerqueens.link/OG. Okay, let's talk about scuba diving and the scuba tanks. This is something that I didn't know. I didn't know that that there would ever be helium in a scuba tank. Like, I didn't know anything about that. And Susie kind of attributes the investigation not really asking the right questions or identifying any of these things as like, wait a second, that's not adding up, or like, but wait, why did that happen or whatever, as just these investigators were not
aware or like knowledgeable enough about it to know what questions to ask.
About scuba, maybe. It's just something that's like so kind of niche that maybe they just didn't know what to ask or whatever. So for everyday, like just regular old scuba divers, you're not going to have helium in a tank. Scuba diving tanks are typically filled with air, 21% oxygen and 79% nitrogen. However, helium can be added to the mix. They call this a trimix for very deep dives. And this is done to reduce the partial pressure of oxygen and nitrogen and avoid oxygen toxicity and nitrogen narcosis. It can make you feel like loopy and like all kinds of things. So divers that are going beyond recreational depths of 30 to 40 meters will use trimix. Helium is used when diving to depths that are greater than approximately 150 to 165 feet. That's a no for me, dog, but there are people that will go that deep.
Right.
Lord, that scares me. However, breathing in 100% helium from a scuba diving tank can cause asphyxiation. When breathing in helium, it displaces the oxygen in your lungs. And if you don't have enough oxygen to breathe, you become unconscious, which can result in death. Not only can helium deprive you of oxygen and cause you to pass out, but it also creates an air embolism or gas bubble that can become trapped in a blood vessel, causing a blockage. The blood vessels can then rupture and cause hemorrhage. Helium can also enter your lungs with enough force to cause your lungs to rupture.
I honestly feel this is very, very educational. I didn't know how dangerous helium was.
I didn't either, because how many of us like have sucked in a little helium from a balloon to make our voice sound silly?
Totally.
Like, you know, and that's one thing Susie said too. She was like, if my kids had breathed in this helium and they heard their voices, you know, get kind of silly or whatever, that would not have flagged them, hey, this isn't what I'm supposed to be breathing. Like, it would have been funny to them. They wouldn't have known not to, you know, because they're children.
Exactly.
An article on Slate.com put it this way, and we'll link to the article. Breathing in pure helium deprives the body of oxygen as if you were holding your breath. If you couldn't breathe at all, you'd start to die in minutes as soon as your body exhausted the supply of oxygen stored in the blood. But helium speeds up the process. So when the gas fills your lungs, it creates a diffusion gradient that washes out the oxygen. And I'm quoting word for word this article. This is verbatim. I didn't write this. This is the article. In other words, each breath of helium you take sucks more oxygen out of your system. So not only are you not breathing in oxygen, it's pulling the oxygen stored that you have. After inhaling helium, the body's oxygen level can plummet to a hazardous level in a matter of seconds. This takes no time at all if you're breathing in 100% helium, seconds to a minute, immediate. Okay, so what is the process for making sure that this sort of thing does not happen? There are actually industry standards that are in place for just that. If you look at Susie's TikTok, she does several videos on this. One of which is that dive shops do not even provide 100% helium tanks to divers normally. I would love to know why Marty had a tank of 100% helium. Did he even know that he had that?
See, that's what I was wondering. Like, was he operating under the assumption that it was a trimix or that it was oxygen and he didn't know that it was helium?
Right. I mean, it just, that's a question that right now we don't have the answer to. And that's why the scuba shop is on the lawsuit. So that part may be answered once this lawsuit has gone through all the proper channels and is resolved.
Right.
But right now, that's a major question. Why did he have 100% helium? But because, yes, they might use it in a trimix, but there's no reason to have 100% helium. There's just no reason.
And my thought, though, is too, let's operate on the assumption that he thought it maybe was a trimix. If he knew that he had a trimix, and I'm just allegedly spitball, you know, whatever, just working this out. If he thought it was a trimix, why would he give it to the kids to play with if he knew that it was a trimix? Because they're, 8 feet the deepest? No reason to have that one.
Right. Yeah, there's no reason for that. Also, you would think that since it's not labeled, there would be kind of a red flag to both of them, honestly, because, you know, again, these are technical divers. They are, one's an instructor. Rodney, Susie says, has over the years built very complex and technical dive equipment. He has articles he's written, and he has been involved or invited to help with top explorers projects. He has written and been published criticizing safety standards of some of the technical scuba industry as not being safe enough. So then you take this tank that is not marked. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to analyze the gas all the time. And Susie shows this device that you hook in and within 30 seconds, sometimes maybe even less, it tells you exactly how much of each gas is in it, right? Because you have to have the right mixture too. So, and you're supposed to do that every time, according to Susie, and she's also very proficient in this, right? So it's not analyzed, but it's also not labeled. And there are very strict standards for labeling it. You're supposed to label them clearly. You're supposed to put dates on that. And then you have to check them again after however long and mark them again. So you would analyze the gas in it. You would label them. You'd put a date on that. And I guess every so often, you're doing that process again to make sure that what you've got labeled is proper. And there's not a label on this at all, but it's like, it's something that's so prevalent that it becomes second nature to divers. And especially as they increase in their knowledge, right? They know that this could contain something other than air. Mm-hmm. So you have to analyze it every single time. And if you look at Susie's TikToks in the comments, there are so many people that come in and say, yeah, I'm a diver. I do this, I do that. And we analyze every time. You mark it every time. You like, there are all these, and they're like, it's second nature. Like, you don't even think about it. You do it. It's part of the process.
So this is not something that it's like, well, some people are a little overboard with it and check it every time, but like, that's just standard.
Yeah. And this is not your home. Your children are here. And again, for whatever reason, you've decided that we are going to have the kids breathe from this tank to play unsupervised. And you don't check it. You know, even if your friend says, yep, it's air. Regular ass air. I believe I'd be checking it again. Let me just be sure.
Yeah.
Also, I see it's not labeled. Let me be sure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know. Mm. Now we're going to talk a little bit about Susie's farm.
Susie is a private owner or private farmer, excuse me, in Jupiter, Florida. And in 2017, she started a nonprofit on her farm called Nourishing Food for Thought. Susie's goal with this organization was to educate her community on food and farming and to give people the opportunity to get outdoors and reconnect with nature, animals, and their bodies. With Nourishing Food for Thought, Susie was able to impact 2,000 individuals annually with hands-on tours, education groups, summer camps, and volunteer hours. Susie ran the farm with Zale and Saxon. After she tragically lost her children, her community rallied around her to support her and her farm. As of January of this year, Susie was able to restart her farming activities and purchase some pigs and chickens. Shortly after this, she began offering educational tours, demonstrations, and workshops. She also runs a summer camp for children ages 6 to 10, the same ages as Zale and Saxon. And this is something that has been both very difficult and very rewarding for Susie. I just can't imagine. However, Susie's now ex-husband is pressuring her for... She wants to use his share of the property to force her to sell it. If she is forced to sell, she will lose the home she shared with her children as well as her nonprofit. Susie is attempting to appear in court with an offer to buy him out. However, he is trying to accelerate the process. There is a GoFundMe set up and all donations will go toward her purchase of the land to continue and expand her nonprofit in the name of her children. And we will have that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, if you feel compelled or able, I do think I saw recently a video where she has made some progress on that effort. But I don't know if then he still would be able to come back and try something else. So definitely check it out. See where, once this is, you know, dropped, where that process is. There is also a petition on change.org to reopen the investigation into Zale and Saxon's deaths. The legal basis of the petition is that under Florida Statute 827.032B, quote, a person who willfully or by culpable negligence neglects a child and in doing so causes great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement to the child commits a felony of the second degree punishable as provided in S.775.082, S.775.083, or S.775.084. So jot that down.
Yeah.
Those who created and signed the petition believe that both Rodney and Marty's actions meet this criteria for culpable negligence as outlined in the statute. Change.org states that this petition is important because the loss of a child is an unimaginable pain that is made even more unbearable when justice isn't served. It says that it's crucial for the Martin County legal system, sheriff's office in the state of Florida, to demonstrate that negligence resulting in the loss of life, especially that of children, will not be tolerated. Reopening this case and bringing charges against Rodney Nairn and Marty Watson will send a strong message that such acts of negligence are unacceptable and will be met with an appropriate legal response. And, you know, Susie wants the case reopened so that she can get answers to the questions that she has. She wants to know exactly how her children died. She's seen parts of the medical examiner report, but she has not seen how her children physically died. There's no explanation about the unmarked tank. She doesn't know who the police used as a scuba diving expert to determine what happened with the tank. She just wants to understand, like you said, how did both of her children pass out at the same time using only one regulator? Ugh. And it lends itself. Again, I haven't seen that report either, but it doesn't sound like there was water in their lungs. So it lends itself to that they weren't even in the pool when it happened.
Right.
I would think.
Yeah, I do not know. When speaking with Susie, she told us that her biggest challenge is that she doesn't know how to make people take notice, and she doesn't know how to ask for support. She knows that people can, as a mask, can make a difference, and that's what we're hoping can happen now. Ultimately, we just need to talk about this. And Zale and Saxon, they were 7 and 9 years old. Justice should be served for them. Susie should know exactly what happened to her kids. She shouldn't have to lose her farm and her livelihood. So if you choose to, please consider signing the petition so that justice can be served. If you are financially able, please also consider donating to her GoFundMe if it moves you to do so. And both will be listed in the show notes, like we said, and on our social media platforms.
Yeah, and that's it. If you are a scuba expert, please do let us know what you think. I mean, we'd like to hear from everybody, you know, what you think happened, or just what you think in general. I have just a very small, narrow experience with scuba, but there are a lot of people who know a lot about it. I mean, Susie being one of them, who is just absolutely perplexed by this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just really disappointing that the media has portrayed these children essentially as adult level proficiency in something that they just simply cannot.
It's like how kids aren't allowed to go missing.
Right. Yeah.
Because they're like, allowed.
Oh, well, yeah. Oh, well, she probably just walked off. She's not allowed to do that. She's a kid. She's supposed to be here. Yeah. Yeah.
But that is the case. And all we really hope to, well, obviously we want justice for Susie. We want to help her get answers, but we also just really want to talk about it and reach as many people as we can with this. So hopefully something will move forward.
Yeah. And if you're a Florida K-cutie, call your state representatives and, you know, follow that chain and see if you can't, you know, reach somebody and say, hey, I'm here. This needs to be looked at.
Absolutely. Yes. But thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We love you. And our hearts obviously 100% go out to Susie. But we hopefully will catch you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.